The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. Want to talk to them? Give them a call. 919-781-1973. And today's the day we open the cover in a brand new issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme, not surprisingly, is Christmas in Carolina. There's a little pastry frame, is what it looks like anyway, the state of North Carolina, and it's got like a red and white checked tablecloth on the inside. And on the rest of the page are various cookies. I suppose that's a cookie also. It was actually icing around the top that fooled me. It's a cookie, and then they put the icing right around the edge of the cookie, which was cut into the state, roughly the state of North Carolina. And I'm going to begin, as we usually do, with the Welcome to Our State by Elizabeth Hudson, Editor-in-Chief. She's entitled this month's welcome, Season of Light. The electricity flickered at first and then went off altogether, extinguished by Hurricane Michael, which felled 100-year-old trees in Greensboro, entangled power lines, and plunged most of the city into darkness for days. The house fell into an eerie silence, so accustomed am I to the ambient hum of the refrigerator, the click of the thermostat in the background, the whir of the ceiling fan, sounds we don't notice at all until they are no longer there. I rummaged for candles and a camping lantern and set about bringing as much light into the house as I could to stave off a darkness made even darker without the evening glow of streetlights, without the neighbor's porch light that's always on. My mother, who lives up the road from me, got out her battery-powered window candles, the ones she and my dad always put in the center of the windowsills in our house in Ashboro at Christmas time. And even though we were still a few months away from Christmas, I felt better knowing that my mother wasn't entirely in the dark either. My dad loved those lights in the windows. He was a photographer, a studier of light, and at Christmas he made our house glow. He wrapped strands of white lights up in the staircase banister and strung lights along the fireplace mantel. In our dining room, he set up a small tree lit with multicolor lights and used a half dozen cords of lights on the tree in the living room, 1,000 lights or more on our 6-foot tree. He lit pillar candles on the kitchen table and set out motifs in the bathroom. And on the coffee table, my dad assembled our Swedish brass angel chime. 4 candles in the base gave off enough heat to spin a triangle of angels that rang a bell. My parents bought that decoration more than 40 years ago at the old General Hardware in Ashboro, when they moved into their first house, along with their first set of ornaments for the tree. The angel chime was my favorite of all our decorations because of the way the brass glinted in the tiny halo of candlelight, the way the chime emitted its delicate ting. At night, when my dad turned off the television and the lamps in the den before bed, he and my mom would sit for a while, talking and enjoying the glow of all those lights, catching a quiet moment for themselves, a silent night made luminous and warm. I wish it could stay like this, he told her. When the power returned to Greensboro several days after the big storm, I walked over to check on my mom. She hadn't put those candle lights away yet. I might as well keep them out, she said. Christmas is coming. And when it does, she'll put up a small tree, Fewer lights than what my dad would have done, but enough to allay the darkness. She'll line the fireplace mantle with lights, and she'll put out that Swedish angel chime and light its four candles. And it'll make the two of us happy to see it spin, our Christmas memories still burning bright. And now I am going to interpret the photo essay, as I do in the first reading of each month for you. This month is entitled Love and Light. In Winston-Salem, neighbors gather together to celebrate Love Feast, the way they have since the first Moravian settlers arrived here centuries ago, with hot coffee, sweet buns, stirring music, and the warm glow of candlelight. And this is written by Katie St. Singh. The overall impression of this double spread behind the title that I just read you and the text is one of burgundy red, interspersed with a lot of out-of-focus little dots of white. Now, the burgundy red is because apparently most people in this picture are wearing red, and the little dots of light are because every person is holding up a candle. They look to be real candles, but I'm not sure. And as we go further into the crowd, of course, just the photography being the way it is, you get out of focus as you go further back. So everything in the rear, probably from the center of the picture backwards, is out of focus. And all of the candles that are being held up are kind of blurry little white dots against the reddish background. In the foreground, we have a young man and a young woman, and here's a couple of other young women, and they're all singing with very happy faces, and there's some older folks and some middle-aged folks behind them holding their candles very high. And it does say here at the lower left, at the end of the Love Feast service at Wake Forest University, Wake Chapel transforms into a sea of light as worshipers lift their voices and their candles. Overleaf, Wake Chapel. The very first Love Feast, Liebesmahl, to the German-speaking Moravians, who meticulously recorded it, must have felt like a beacon. The year was 1727, and the unity of brethren were celebrating the spiritual renewal of their ancient church in Saxony, where they'd found refuge after a century of religious persecution in their native Moravia and Bohemia. Soon they would settle in Pennsylvania, then in North Carolina, and they'd carry Love Feast with them as they spread the gospel around the globe. Even then, the concept was tried and true, borrowed from the ancient Christians who broke bread in celebration of agape, or unconditional love. In 1965, not far from where the Moravians settled in present-day Forsyth County, a group of Wake Forest University students held their own Love Feast. Fewer than 200 people attended, but that first service ignited a spark. Now, thousands of attendees of all denominations, the holidays don't really start until they sip coffee and sing hymns at Wake Chapel. Love Feast may not be exclusive to Winston-Salem, but the community has embraced it with open hearts. And by the time you hear this read, it will have passed, so there's no point in giving you the details. Except if you want to learn about it in general, you could go to lovefeast.wfu.edu. Overleaf, St. Philip's Church. Though not an official sacrament, the Love Feast services offers opportunities throughout the year for fellowship and thanksgiving at each of the 13 churches of the Salem congregation and beyond, including the only African-American Moravian church in the country. St. Philip's traces its roots to 1822, when Salem's enslaved community began worshiping together, first in a log church, then in a brick one. In 1952, St. Philip's moved to a sanctuary closer to where most of its members lived, and the original church, now part of the old Salem Museum and Gardens, stood vacant for a time. In 2009, the congregation marked the anniversary of their ancestral church's consecration, the Moravian Way, with a powerful love feast. Last year, the Moravian Brass Band played Christmas tunes on the lawn before the service. Inside, Dieners, German for servers, passed out mugs of Russian tea. And in the pews, the same ones where in 1865 congregants listened as a Union cavalry chaplain announced their freedom, worshippers felt the weight of history. There are three photos on this page. The first one is taken, I guess, in the kitchen area, where someone is pouring the Russian tea into dozens of white mugs from a pitcher. The second one is the serving of the mugs to individual congregants. And the third is somebody outside playing a trombone with a little sheet music attached on that little stand that attaches to each of these instruments so that the concert can be heard outside. It's during the day because the sun is shining brightly behind this man's head. Some more about St. Philip's. After so many generations of practice, the familiar beats of the love feast service are a comfort. There are prayers and scriptural readings, hot beverages and sweet buns. Sometimes there's a homily, and there's always music. Song is deeply woven into Moravian history and culture. It was Moravians, for example, who first brought the trombone to the U.S., where brass instruments continue to play a prominent role in worship. A hallmark of the Christmas love feast at St. Philip's is the special music that's chosen to accompany the tea and buns. Last year, the Salem Singing Sisters wore their 18th century best down to the ribbons that once denoted a woman's marital status. As worshippers broke bread, the Merry Sisters filled the church with harmony. This was at 911 South Church Street in Winston-Salem. Now, this year's love feast at that church is within the time frame of you catching it, so I'll give you the date. December 24th at 7:30 p.m., should you choose to stray out on Christmas Eve, at 3002 Bon Air Avenue in Winston-Salem. You can look up more information at stphillipsmoravian.org, and Phillips only has one L. And here are the women. There are six of them, all dressed in the traditional Moravian garb. It's like a long white apron high on their waist. And then they've got a kind of a shawl that comes over their shoulder and splits down to little points and meets the apron down below. And they're all wearing a white head covering and holding on to very large sheaths of music. Historic Bethabara. The journey to North Carolina from Pennsylvania took 6 weeks on foot, and the first 15 Moravian brethren who come to settle this wild and new land were surely weary when they arrived in November of 1753. Yet they found great strength of spirit and a tradition they'd brought with them down the great wagon road. In an abandoned cabin in the Piedmont wilderness, they prepared a love feast to thank God for guiding them on their way. The village that flourished around that cabin was called Bethabara, Hebrew for House of Passage, and for a time it served as a center of Moravian life. But it was always meant to be temporary. As the nearby town of Salem grew, Bethabara fell into decline, and by 1820, most of the original buildings there were gone. Today, historic Bethabara Park offers a look at the early days of the settlement, complete with tour guides like Stephen Harris, pictured here, whose knowledge and 18th century attire help bring past to life. This is a granite block building, or maybe it's a sandstone, not really sure. It's a sandstone color, so I guess it probably is, which has got three They make that four windows. Two of them have arches in the top of them, and it looks like it was the sanctuary in a church. And the other two have the arches, perhaps originally, but no more. It's been filled in. The arch is there, but the glass isn't, and they're just regular rectangular windows. And then there's a white door up a little stairway. And we have Stephen here walking by in his traditional garb with the long stockings and the pants that come down to the knees and a jacket which hangs low on his body. And he's holding a lantern. Historic Bethabara. Many of the buildings at historic Bethabara Park, including the 1788 Gemine House, which once served as a church, meeting house, school, and minister's quarters, have stood the test of time. Bethabara Moravian Church, too, traces its history back to the first 15 Moravians who settled here. Most Sundays, the congregation gathers in a newer, larger sanctuary. Except at Christmas, once a year in early December, the church partners with historic Bethabara Park to hold a love feast in the restored Gemine House. At last year, as the Reverend Jeff Jones led the service, darkness gathered outside. But in the cell, or sanctuary, light poured from the illuminated painting at the lectern, a Moravian star overhead, and a host of beeswax candles. At Christmas time, the Gemine House glows. And we have the officiant here on the left. He's reading by candlelight. And there are folks in just plain bench pews. They're each holding up a candle, and they're looking at a program in their hands, perhaps reading along or singing. And there's another set of pews up against the far wall, the ones with those high windows with the arches. And they're just sitting against the wall and doing the same. And of course, as is traditional these days, you have quite a variety of outfits, with some people very nicely dressed and many people just wearing sweatshirts and jeans, and I see a lot of sneakers and athletic wear. Historic Bethabara again. Families look forward to Historic Bethabara's annual Christmas event as an opportunity to see the park and Moravian history in a different light. After the love feast service in the Gemine House, visitors like the Johnson family pictured here admire Bethabara's Christmas pyramid and putz, or nativity scene, Moravian traditions that the earliest missionaries brought over from Germany. They can take in a Silent Night-themed puppet show. They can wander this historic village where demonstrations of colonial quilting, cooking, and blacksmithing illuminate light in the Piedmont backcountry as Moravians' long tradition of craftsmanship. In the early days of Bethabara, when the settlement existed on the western edge of the frontier, such skills were necessary for survival. Today, Joel Cooper, shown here in one of the pages, shows how a cooper would have built and repaired barrels and casks. And he also creates a friendly Christmas reindeer. So we see the reindeer, which is two branches or sticks for the two set of front legs and two set of rear legs, and they're stuck into a log. And then there's some more wood pieces attached for the head and the tail, and the back is covered with some greenery. And the neck is covered with a great big red ribbon. And some odd-shaped branches form the antlers. And the family here, the parents with the kids on their shoulders, are really enjoying looking at this tall Christmas tree-like structure that's built over the creche here. Salem Academy. Only at Christmas time does Love Feast include candles, often made by local churches using beeswax and beef tallow, and always trimmed with a red paper frill. For students at Salem Academy, Love Feast plays a role in the cherished tradition, at Senior Vespers, a candlelight choral service. The senior class serves coffee and buns in the Moravian tradition. Moravians founded the School for Girls in 1772, a decade after candles first appeared at a North Carolina love feast as a visual aid to teach children that grace is the light of the world. Today, for participants of all ages, the candles continue to impart a sense of wonder. So here we have all the girls dressed in white, holding their candles and singing on the left-hand side. They seem to be facing the parents who are seated holding candles and looking up toward them from the right. And there's a close-up of a woman reading the program, 2017 Senior Vespers, and a close-up of one of the candles with a nice bunch-up of red ribbon to make multiple bows at the base of it. Calvary Moravian. During a love feast service, neighbors depend on one another, reflecting the goodwill of the season. Deaners cheerfully serve the congregation. Worshippers break bread side by side. Candles are lit from one to the next. A common flame traveling down each pew until the entire church is aglow. But it occurred to Ginny Baker several years ago that whether because they're homebound or simply too far away, many people are unable to make it to her church, Calvary Moravian, on Christmas Eve. She had an idea. Calvary streams its services live on the internet. A few items, a candle, Moravian sugar cookies, they travel better than buns, coffee, and a program would help faraway friends feel included. Love Feast in a Box became a fundraiser for her church group. Calvary Sisters Fellowship. The sisters mold the candles, trim them with a red crepe paper, frill, make a day of building the boxes, happy to be giving the gift of togetherness. Here's a nice picture of the brick-sided church with a steeple and a clock tower on it. They need to get the clock fixed. It reads two slightly different times on different sides, but other than that, it's very nice looking. And on the right, we see the Moravian cookies in nicely arranged. They're heart-shaped on a plate. There's a cup of coffee, and there's a couple of creamers sitting beside, and some sugar in case you want that. A candle with the red crepe paper, and the Christmas Eve Love Fest program, which says, glory to God in the highest, on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And that's our pictorial. I hope you enjoyed it. You are listening to our state magazine and the Triangle Radio Reading Service. If you have any comments on our program, please call the studios 919-832-5138. And we have just enough time to read, I think my favorite author is Drew Perry. And so let's see what he's going to tell us about his kids, no doubt, this week in a little article entitled Adventures with Toad and We Return to the Rink. It's Christmas time in the city. Amid the busy bustle, ice skaters find moments of peace and joy while circling outdoor rinks. Here they come round and round again, gliding into another holiday season, written by Drew Perry. My childhood memories of ice skating are hazy and indoors. Fluorescent lighting, bleachers, a birthday party maybe, and the sudden realization that if you didn't know how to stop on roller skates, then you had absolutely no idea how to stop with ice skates. I don't even think that I've always associated ice skating with the holiday season per se, except that the Peanuts Christmas special opens with that long pond montage, and there's Joni Mitchell's indispensable river that she wishes to skate away on, and now here comes that minor key, tear-jerking kids in bed, Christmas lights glowing in the living room feeling. But y'all, I digress. This is about the proliferation of downtown, outdoor holiday season ice skating rinks across the state, and about raising two boys who see Winterfest billboards springing up each late November and say, Daddy, can we do that? Can we go? And each year, with visions of compound fractures dancing in my head, I say, yeah, certainly, as always, my sugar plums. Let's go rent you a pair of knife-soled shoes. This is about renting two pairs of skates, then. One for the toad and one for the wee. And me sitting in the almost snow of a refreshingly early December cold snap, wondering, how did we get here so fast? Who are these tall, stringy, toe-headed boys? This is our third year of outdoor skating, and we've done it in Graham and in Pinehurst and frequently in our hometown, Greensboro, where there's something, say it, magical about skating under the lights. The tall buildings rising behind you, the slate-gray sky hanging low overhead. Christmas can be hard, whether you celebrate it or not. All this pressure comes tumbling down all season long. All this build-up to 24-hour holiday radio and figgy pudding and Santa and naughty and nice. And yes, I know there's another way to read all of this, a way to see it as a time of peace and stock-taking and gratitude. But I think we should all just read it that way, in fact. But in our house, it's also about the mad dash to make sure the bikes have been ordered and assembled, the batteries stockpiled, the menus gamed out, the cards mailed. What I'm trying to say here is, as the boys glide left and across the ice rink in front of me, I'm trying to say that I'd better relish the season in its actual relish trays, in my buddy Terry's annual Stray Tuesday arrival with a deadly pitcher of homemade eggnog. In the evening after Thanksgiving, when we take the boys out to run the rows at the tree lot to their heart's content, I relish the ice rink. I relish the lead-up. The advent, if you will, Christmas morning with these two boys is so freighted and frantic that I lean honestly on those early days, the single digits of December, the week that we have ample time to go skating two or three nights in a row. Here they come round and round again, this time asking, will you come skate with us? Third pair of skates then, and here each boy, eggshell light and holding my hand, and hear the cold wind in my lungs, and the sure knowledge that there's no good way to stop, not ever. My grandmother's old lights are hung on our porch already, and when we get home, there'll be that blue glow, visible even before we turn onto our street. So it's so dark in these early these nights, and my wife and I will get the boys tucked in upstairs, come back down to sit in the warmth of a lit tree and a good record. But for now, right now, it's just push and glide, push and glide. The wee giggling and the toad concentrating, all of us holding tight to each other, to the season, to this one early, near-perfect night, and these few flurries just starting to fall. Yes, of course there will be school tomorrow, but yes, we can all skate a little longer. This feeling just around the next corner, this next turn, the one where we still haven't fallen down, it feels a lot like hope. Let's not stop just yet. And we've run out of time for this episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it, and you'll listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. Comments, questions? Call the studios, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.